versus Astru, Mr. Forbes.
May it please the court, my name is Randall Forbes, and I represent the claimant in this case, Bradley Scheidler. I'll probably read my brief and be less than 10 minutes, but the two main points are that the ALJ had a highly restricted residual functional capacity, which was based on sedentary but had several additional restrictions. A few of those restrictions were stay away from cold and humidity, and there were some concentration restrictions. Those were based on claimant's testimony. Claimant also testified about the need to rest during the day and about not getting enough sleep. And yet, even though the same evidentiary basis existed for that restriction was not given, nor was there any explanation as to why claimant's testimony on that fact was unbelievable or incredible. If I tell you that I can only eat one pizza in a day, you might believe me. If I tell you I can eat 10 pizzas in a day, you might not believe me. But there's no delineation in this case as to how many pizzas the judge finds believable, to use an analogy that is more probably apropos for lunchtime. Nevertheless, Martinez, the case of Martinez, indicates that we need explanations as to at least key statements as to whether they're credible or not and what the analysis is. Why is the rest period during the daytime a key statement? Because if the judge had accepted that testimony, it would have been inconsistent with competitive employment under the testimony of vocational expert, which is in the file.
We get down to the fifth level here, right?
Yeah.
The sedentary stuff, and then the.
That's correct.
What did the vocational expert say he could do, and what was available?
Well, the vocational expert responds to several different hypotheticals under the residual functional capacity that the judge put forward. There were some jobs left. I'd have to dig that out.
Well, they mentioned some.
Yeah.
I don't want to be cynical, but oftentimes we get here where you get to somebody, there are jobs available that somebody doesn't want to do, and an employer might not even want to hire them. But we get down here to this stage, and so the question with this brittle bone disease, is he nevertheless, at least capable of doing that much, the ALJ said he was.
Right, and that's what we dispute, because the ALJ makes no logical distinction or justifies why have certain restrictions, humidity, cold, etc., but not the restriction in regard to his rest periods. The other point is this. The constitutional requirement, the statutory requirement, is that claimants get a hearing. And first off, hearing means actually physically hearing. And the claimant testified that he needed three, maybe interpreted as four, rest periods during the day of 60 to 90 minutes. And the judge in the decision says that he testified 5 to 6 rest periods, 60 to 90 minutes. So the judge obviously didn't even physically hear the evidence correctly. And this is a key piece of evidence, because it's the difference between disability and non-disability. So in that respect...
What was the difference between what the judge heard and what he said?
The judge...
From your point of view.
Right. From my point of view, he testified three, but it could be interpreted four rest periods during the day. And the judge stated in the decision five or six rest periods during the day.
So that's even worse than what he said.
Right, but the judge gave no credit to the five or six times because it was not in the residual functional capacity.
How long were these rest periods?
I'm sorry, what?
How long were the rest periods?
60 to 90 minutes.
So if he does six times 60?
That's a lot of rest period during a day.
A lot of room left to work, doesn't it?
Right. That's like me saying, I can eat 10 pizzas and you not believing me. At some point, between 1 and 10, you might believe me, but this judge never heard the accurate testimony, which is 3. And if the judge had believed that, then when that's matched with the vocational expert's testimony as allowable breaks, then that leads to a Step 5 decision in favor of the claimant. So that's the gist of the argument. I think I reserved 2 minutes.
Okay.
Yeah.
Thank you, Mr. Forbes. Mr. Elysia?
May it please the Court, Brian Elysia, on behalf of the Commissioner. In this particular case, Mr. Scheidler makes his arguments in his brief, but makes them in a factual vacuum. And in fact, in this case, the record context is very significant. And the ALJ in this case and the district court recognize that the most significant factor was that to be entitled to disability insurance benefits under the Act, Mr. Scheidler was required to show that he was disabled for a consecutive 12-month period before his date last insured. Now, in this case, Mr. Scheidler alleged a disability onset date in June 1995, and his date last insured was March 2000. But as both the ALJ...
Has his condition changed since 2000?
There was some testimony at the hearing that Mr. Scheidler said, I may have been a little better off in... around that time, but I'm essentially the same. Possibly I was a little bit better at that time.
Well, did the administrative law judge ask him to, you know, do something with his fingers?
He testified that he had...
I mean, testimony. I mean, I'm asking, would the administrative law judge say to him, look, you have problems with your fingers? I mean, can you hold a pencil in your hand or what? Is there anything about that?
The administrative law judge did ask him about problems with his hands and with his fingers.
And he said what?
He said he had difficulty writing, and that actually.
And so did she disbelieve that or what?
Well, in her. She asked Mr. Scheidler's attorney to describe the condition of his hands and how his fingers were.
Why didn't she ask him to describe it?
Well, it was...
He's there.
Mr. Scheidler's attorney was asking him about his condition, and the ALJ wanted to get on the record what his hands were like during the hearing. But the ALJ, in her decision, also considered that there was a lack of any medical treatment for this condition.
Well, so what did she say about his fingers?
She specifically said that he testified that his hands were crumpled.
What did she find about her fingers? I don't care what he said. What did she find?
She found that he offered no evidence of treatment for his fingers. or any.
What did she conclude about his fingers? That he can use them normally? Did she say that? What?
Well, she noted that he hadn't had any treatment for them, and that the record didn't show.
I'm asking, did she make a finding as to what the conditions of his fingers are? What the condition is, or what it was, you know, in 1999.
She limited his RFC to
You're not answering my question. I'm asking, what did she say about his fingers?
She found that there was no evidence to support his allegations as to the condition of his fingers at or before the time of his date last insured.
She thinks his fingers are fine. The reason I harp on that is I'm puzzled by the fact that this Dr. Barkhouse, this is the vocational expert, right?
Yes.
So what he says that she could be a credit clerk, an order clerk, or a telephone clerk. Now all of these jobs are very finger intensive, aren't they?
I don't know the exact requirements for
fingers.
What do
you think? You think a clerk has to use her fingers, his fingers?
He might have to use them to carry files or to do some amount of writing.
To carry files? You're a credit clerk. Aren't you typing into a computer or writing things down? If you're a telephone clerk, you're picking up the phone, you're dialing, you're using your fingers all the time, aren't you, in these jobs? So he's listing jobs which are finger intensive. And it seems to me it's very important that we understand what the evidence is about his fingers and what the administrative law judge thought the condition of his fingers was.
Well, the administrative law judge had to consider what the condition of his fingers were at the time of his date last insured.
Yes, I know that. But you said he hadn't changed, right? You said there wasn't any significant change since 2000.
That he might have been
so
better.
You said there wasn't a significant change. So why are you harping on the 2000 evidence?
Because the ALJ didn't have record evidence to go on as to evidence for his treatment or as to the severity of his hand condition when she was dealing with a date last insured of 9 years earlier.
He testified about his fingers being very bad, didn't he? Which is consistent with his osteogenesis condition.
He testified.
Inevitable, but isn't that what he testified to?
He testified that he had some that he could write for a paragraph or so, and then needed to rest. But he had some writing abilities. And at the time of his date last insured, he was riding a dirt bike.
Is that March of 2000?
Yes.
Okay.
Well,
so, that was going to be my question. Is obviously he was much better then than he is now. I think that must be what we're looking at. Riding a dirt bike, he did have an injury and supposedly recovered.
Yes, he had, and actually the only injury during the relevant time period was a ruptured patella when Mr. Scheidler was dirt bike riding. And
What the date of that was?
Pardon?
What was the date of that?
That was in October 1999, and his date last insured was March 2000.
So just a year before this, so he's riding a dirt bike and had the accident.
Yes, and also, during the relevant time period, he's seen by two different orthopedic specialists, both of whom release him to work without any restrictions.
So he's a lot, we have to assume he's a lot worse now than he was then. Is that what the ALJ was considering?
I think the ALJ made it a point to say, I have to go back to his date last insured and determine his condition at that time. And the ALJ considered his subjective statements, considered his very short medical history, and made her findings from there. I mean, the fact that he was treated for one injury from a dirt bike accident, and that, you know, both his two different treating orthopedic specialists found that he could return to work without any restrictions.
Was the vocational expert looking at his capacity in the workforce and the available work now or whenever the hearing was versus 2000?
I don't recall if the hypothetical question was that specific as to...
Well, he's got this brittle bone disease. This is the problem with all these Social Security cases. When you're trying to go back in time, when are we talking about it? It would seem to me, whatever those obscure jobs are, that and Judge Posner's questions are exactly right. Is he present capable with, what can he do with his fingers, which is now, as opposed to 2000?
Well, he can file an SSI application.
Now or back in 2000? Sounds to me that back in 2000 there weren't that many problems. Is that what we're determining? Is that what we have to decide upon?
Yes, the ALJ, with the record before her and, you know, the scant medical evidence, the indication that he was treated for a ruptured patella because of a dirt bike injury, and the fact that his doctors told him that he could return to see them if he needed it, and he did not.
Where was he working back then?
He was a rental consultant for a period of time from 1990 to 1994. He was a rental consultant off and on, and then for 4 months in May 1999 to October 1999, when he was in the dirt bike accident, he was a carpet cleaner, which would suggest amount of exertion as well.
Okay, well, thank you, Mr. Leisure. Mr. Ford, how much time does he have? 4 minutes?
The point about the dirt bike is that he didn't even possess the ability to operate that correctly. I mean,
that's why he had a wreck. Huh?
Yeah. And then, second, back in time is not as difficult in this case as in others, because his impairment is a genetic disorder or a birth defect.
Is it a progressive disease?
Progressive in this sense. You're predisposed to injury of the bones and joints, and so the more times you fall or are active, yes, you have more breaks. And it's progressive in the sense that you're more prone to arthritis. But even in the applicable period, which I regard as before 12/31/2000, the testimony was he had 55 bone breaks. That's a lot of bone breaks. And there were surgeries and other things. The other thing about the doctor's restrictions, the judge obviously thought those were of no weight, even though she discussed them, because no restrictions means can do the complete range of work, whether it's heavy or
well,
light.
Did you have or suggest that the administrative law judge appoint a doctor to examine him? Because the medical records seem very sparse.
Well, there was a consultative examiner. I think there was a consultative examination in the case. I generally don't request consultative examinations from Social Security orthopedic specialists because more likely than not, they're just likely to bring back negative evidence.
Bias, in other words.
Yeah. That too.
Why would that be? Do these have a stable of doctors whose job is to pronounce people not disabled? Is that the...
It's not. I don't find that it's bias can always come into play, but I find that it's mostly a matter of that the doctors are not practicing or treat. They're not practicing physicians anymore. Most that I've dealt with have not practiced for 10, 15 years.
Wouldn't it have been good to have a doctor examine him in preparation for the hearing?
In hindsight, yes, but I had strategic reasons as to why I didn't do that beforehand. And
you wouldn't have to use one of their doctors, right? You just find an orthopedist anywhere.
Well, that gets down to the point that these hearings are generally supposed to be informal. I mean, I could probably win every orthopedic hearing I ever had if I'm willing to spend $1,000, $5,000 on an expert money I don't have and that my clients don't have.
Well, I must say, this does not make me happy to hear that you go into this trial. There's a great deal of uncertainty about his condition, and you really didn't put on a case. This guy had to be examined, and his fingers inspected and find out what exactly he can do with his fingers. What is his actual medical history? How much has it changed since 2000? Without that, you just have very little evidence.
I had enough that the judge went all the way from no restrictions to sedentary and a substantial erosion of sedentary work.
That didn't help because there are loads of sedentary jobs for the vocational expert to mention.
Yeah, when I do a case, Your Honor, I evaluate where the judge is on a lot of these cases. My evaluation of this judge was incorrect, quite honestly. But I have one final...
Thank you very much. All right, thank you.